Actually, let someone else do the talking. Glenn Williams, great First Amendment lawyer over in Bar Harbor, who's been just dedicating a ton of energy to the cause of protecting WRFRs and, by extension, all the media's right to have correspondents that are prison inmates. Joining us through the storm from Bar Harbor is Lynn Williams, a First Amendment lawyer who's represented anti-war folks, environmental justice activists, and basically has led much of the fight against the sort of growing trend of fascism in our area here. She practices in state and federal courts in Maine. She's a member of the Legal Advisory Board of Americans for Safe Access, chair of the Maine chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, and member of the National Executive Committee of the Guild. Sounds pretty busy. Welcome to the show, Lynn.
Thank you, Ron. Nice to be here.
Now, something we're trying to get changed here is the ability of people that are incarcerated to have due process, to have access to the media, even to be members of the media. Our own correspondent from the Maine State Prison is now a very kind of irregular correspondent from the high-security prison in Maryland, effectively exiled. Now,
yes.
Cases happened. Can you tell us a bit about this case and where things stand?
At the time I got involved, Dean was incarcerated at Warren in the Maine State Prison. That was last October. And he had been an activist. He had been filing grievances on behalf of himself and other prisoners, you know, more general grievances that would also impact other prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in terms of conditions in the prison, he had become very concerned about suicides and attempted suicides in the prison, and he had been speaking out to the extent a prisoner can speak out on WRFR and through Lance Tapley, who is a reporter with the Portland Phoenix. This went on for a bit of time. However, he then disclosed some information, which I still argue was not confidential information, which the Department of Corrections argues was confidential information, and they essentially shut him down. They wrote him a letter that said, prisoners are not permitted to be media correspondents, stop it, or you will be punished, is what that said.
Right, and then he said, well, oh, no. And, in fact, yep. we also wrote a letter to Corrections saying that doesn't make sense.
That's correct.
And but they had the corpus. They did
That's
what
right.
they did.
They had the corpus and habeas corpus, and they could do what they want, essentially. So what they wanted to do and document and show that this was the case around that time, they were quite anxious to get him out of state. And they made an arrangement with Maryland that they would take one of their prisoners and Maryland would take Dean. And there are even some documents that suggested we need him gone within 24 hours. It was hard to see what the urgency it was because Dean had been shut off. He couldn't communicate with Lance and with you anymore. But there was a great urgency to get him out of state.
Well, he was making some very serious charges about the basic corrupted system that he perceived as being, you know, inherent through the whole management of at least the prisons themselves. Some of the guards were even giving him info to put on the show and to get to Lance.
Mm-hmm. And Lance continued his, you know, you continued speaking out about the prison. Lance continued his series of articles. Both activities continue to this day. And Dean continues to file grievances. I have located an attorney for him in Maryland who has now signed on as my co-counsel on this suit. His name is Curtis Cooper, and he's a colleague from the National Lawyers Guild. And so he visits Dean. So we've managed to keep him in contact. We know when our mail doesn't get to him and when his mail doesn't get to us, which happens. And all my mail is opened, despite the fact that legal mail is not to be opened out of the eyesight of the prisoner.
So there are blatant illegalities going on, but because it's behind the walls inside the Stone Hotel, somehow it's all okay.
Yeah. The problem with the mail down there is this becomes another lawsuit because it's a different prison. And but there were mail improprieties up here that we will include, that we do include in our lawsuit against the Maine Department of Corrections. And the Department of Corrections seems blinded by the fact that sometime, I'm hoping it will be with this case, but, you know, when you're in this field of law, the sort of law I do, you have to have a thick skin and you have to be prepared to lose, I have to say, more often than not, to be honest. But eventually this will come tumbling down because this system is built on corruption. This is like the mafia. Eventually they will get these guys.
Now, what's happening here is it's basically things that are in contradiction to the state and federal constitution. You know, are there basic constitutional questions that are being looked at in this case?
The basis for our action in federal court in Maine is First Amendment violations and Eighth Amendment violations. The Eighth Amendment violations are sort of easy to explain. Cruel and unusual punishment is the operative phrase. And we address in there some of the things that were going on in the prison, some of the things that Dean wrote up grievances about. And the First Amendment violations are essentially their refusal to permit him to communicate with the media is the first part of that. But the second part of both sets of these violations is they then retaliated against him for this. So, you know, they retaliate. They shut him off from the media first, but they also transferred him. And we're arguing that that was a retaliatory transfer, and we want him back here in Maine. So that's the sort of, sure, it's way more complicated, but that's the short answer. These suits are hard. There's a higher bar, a much higher bar for prisoners to get over in these lawsuits. If this was someone on the outside who had been mistreated by the system, for example, in police brutality cases,
right. They
would have a much lower bar to get over than an incarcerated person. In 1996, Congress, in their wisdom, of course, because we're all scared of prisoners, home invasions, blah, 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 and these people then get in prison and they're such brilliant legal minds that they get themselves out, by spending all their time in the law library. Congress passed the Prison Legal Reform Act, which sets this higher bar. It essentially makes these folks, the due process they can receive, harder to get than people on the outside.
That just doesn't really seem right. And you know something that's... To me, in my experience, that's how the media treats prisoners. It's very, very, very rare to get their side of any story.
Oh, yeah. The warden, you even see a story about them.
The presumption is that because they've been convicted of a crime and are serving time, that therefore they can't possibly have anything truthful or intelligent or worthy of being heard.
Mm-hmm.
What is the exact stage that things are at right now within this case?
Well, we need to... I got a huge number of documents through a Maine Freedom of Access Act, a couple or 3,000 documents, which pertain to Dean. We then had to tell the other side, you know, the complaint was filed after that. We then have a period of time to tell the other side what evidence we're going to, at least at this point, what documents we're going to include in the trial. Essentially, I told her all the documents you gave me, you know, her being the Diane Sleek, who is the Assistant Attorney General for the DOC, she told me nothing. You know, you have everything I'm going to use. And then the additional documents I have were given to me by Lance Tapley, which are three consent orders from the 70s, which are relevant because they represented agreements between the Department of Corrections and the plaintiffs to...
Those are remarkable.
Things. Yeah, those are. We're going to have to argue that at least two of them are, in fact, still relevant and still in force. As I stated before, the Prison Legal Reform Act intervened, and so there are some twists there.
More higher bars?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, exactly. And so then we have until mid-November to complete what's called discovery. And at this point, I've just finished preparing interrogatories, which go to the Attorney General, and she has to have her clients, and there are eight of them, answer the questions on paper. These are not depositions. And they contain questions like, you know, how long have you been at the prison? Have you ever been reprimanded? Have you received training in X, Y, and Z? And then specific questions about various incidents. With those, and they have to be answered under oath. They have to be answered truthfully. Then I'll decide, when I get those back, I'll decide whether to depose any of the defendants, to ask them further questions about the various incidences that we have in our complaint. A lot of this, I don't think there's going to be too much dispute about the facts of the situation, because everything's on paper. You know, the fact that the wrong guy signed the thing he wasn't supposed to sign, and the fact that something wasn't returned to Dean when it should have been, and all of these things are factually based on paper. You know, they're documented.
Okay.
So the factual, we're not going to, I don't think, have too many disputes about the facts. The dispute is about the law and the interpretation of the law. Essentially, the interpretation of the First Amendment, the Eighth Amendment, as interpreted by previous cases and under the Prisoner Legal Reform Act.
Hmm.
So it's going to be, it's not even going to be a trial in the classic sense of a trial with witnesses, but
right.
Rather it's going, as many of these big civil suits are in federal court, it's going to be a legal decision made by the judge. Whether Dean does in fact have the rights we allege, and whether they were violated.
And will this itself, regardless of the verdict, serve as a precedent?
Well, I think if we win, it certainly will. I'm hoping that even if we don't fully win, there'll be some clarification by the court of what rights prisoners have and don't have. We could always appeal. We could go to the First Circuit. We could go to the Supreme Court if we want,
mm-hmm.
and we get them. You
well,
know,
let's just presume you triumph utterly with this first uh-huh. thing here. Then we don't have to
yeah,
bother with that.
Yeah, and that will certainly serve as precedent. Yeah, when you're at the federal level in a circuit, and we're the First Circuit here, which is Maine, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island, and we get a decision. It's binding on Maine, but it's really a strong precedent for the other two states. And it's also precedent nationally.
And is that the federal circuit, Maine and those two states?
The federal circuit, yeah. We have a court in each of those three states. And even if it's a Maine federal decision in mm-hmm. Maine Federal District Court, it's binding. It would be almost binding. I mean, it would be very odd if the other two states, Massachusetts and Rhode Island, didn't feel compelled to follow it. If we went to the circuit, it would be binding on those states and really, really directive towards the rest of the country.
I feel encouraged because just simply because the case is now out there and you're working it, and you have a interesting array of legal assistants too, I believe.
Yes, we have the Blackbird Collective in Portland, and they're doing support for Dean. Letters and they made a film about him, and that's being wrapped up. It's being edited, and so he does have a lot of support. And I know he gets depressed and writes depressed letters, and people get upset and everything. But he has to recognize, and the people supporting him have to recognize that nothing moves quickly in this system.
Hmm.
And while that's frustrating on one hand, sometimes when we look at it the other way, it's reassuring that things don't move quickly. You know, I'm thinking, for example, not in Dean's case, but in general, about capital punishment. The people we could have put to death, you know, in a month, who are found then to not have committed the crime, then I'm reassured that things don't move quickly in the system.
Okay, well then we will, I know that Dean has learned patience, as you say, it can stretch thin, but all
yeah.
those years there. And if you'd like to find out more about Dean, go to PennBay.org and click on Hot Topics, and you'll see a link to the Maine State Prison, and it's basically Dean's blog. Well, look, Lynn, I really want to thank you for your time, and
enjoyed it.
And keep up that good work, and If we we as a station have any questions, if we feel like our mail isn't getting through or something like that, should we let you know about that?
Yes, please do. I'm documenting instances like that. Even though it is against the Supermax in Maryland, you know, that where he is now, Curtis has been filing grievances on his behalf. So if you have any information or even suspicions of that sort, just let me know.
Oh, great, great. And I'm glad to know that that Dean's still doing grievances. It's an art form that he's been sharpening for quite a while. All right, well, thanks an awful lot.
Thanks. Nice talking to you, Ron. Bye.
Bye-bye.